Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle. And we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, guys, welcome back to another Side Hustle City podcast. And as always, the trusty co-host, Kyle Stevie.
I don't know if I want to talk to you today. That personality test is
Oh, he wants to bring up the he really wants to bring up the person. So right before this, we were talking about my personality type. So I'm an ENTP, Myers-Briggs, right? I think that's what this test is. Yep. So Myers-Briggs, but essentially it says I'm a debater and my unyielding honesty and I don't mince words and I care little about being sensitive or compassionate. And it says that our personality types, and Steve, I think you got the same personality type, ENTP, says debater personality type, but more sensitive types in society in general are often conflict averse, which I would agree with. Most people don't want to get into problems, preferring feelings, comfort, and even white lies over unpleasant truths and harsh reality. This frustrates debaters, and it does. Oh, I hate it. It says, and they find that their quarrelsome fun, it's fun.
Oh, yeah.
I like quarreling, but you know? Yeah. It says, burns many bridges, oftentimes inadvertently, and they plow through others' thresholds for having their beliefs questioned and their feelings brushed aside. Treating others as they'd be treated, debaters have little tolerance for being coddled and disliked when people beat around the bush, especially when asking for a favor.
Yep, I 100% agree. Yeah, it's like- you just have to understand the threshold of the person that you're talking to see how far you can go before putting them over the edge.
But it says we do this because we're constantly trying to learn.
Yeah.
And the best way for us to learn is push people to the edge.
Ask questions.
Ask questions. Push. Why do you believe that? Why do you believe that? What? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Like, see, I've just been very good at the art of apologizing. Mm. You know, once you push them over the edge, then you ask for forgiveness.
I get a lot of, because this is exactly how my wife is. She's a ENT, whatever the hell that is.
And it's ENTJs are like sociopaths.
She's not. Not an ENTJ, but she's an ENT, whatever. And it's basically like every time she doesn't get the answer that she wants from you, she does this. It's like in law school, it's called the Socratic method. And she tries to walk you through. I don't get this. Well, why is this? Why is this? Why is this? And I'm like, this is just like being in contract law again. This sucks. I'm sorry. You're right. I love you. Everything's fine. You're right. Okay. Like that's the only way to make it better.
Well, this is like right before I read that too. So my buddy Rob, he posts these funny memes and generally they're more like libertarian conservative, I would say. Yeah. And he's got people, cause we're in the advertising world. We've got some far left friends, right? I've got friends everywhere. I love it. Like I love both sides. Like I don't give
a shit.
That's
the NTP. You debate and you just,
I want to hear, I want to know why you're this psycho. Like, why are you crazy? Like what's the fuck's wrong with you?
Why do you hate the flag? Why do you hate freedom?
Yeah. Why do you hate America? Yeah. Okay. So anyway, he posts this thing and you guys can't see it, but if you know that Drake meme where he's like pointing and then he's laughing, right? So the first thing up top says gun-free zone and it has a picture of America. So, you know, Biden, the left, you know, they want to get rid of guns essentially, you know, according to
Biden's face is covering.
Yeah. That's not Drake.
It's Biden. Right?
Right.
And then below that it shows Afghanistan. It says free gun zone. Funny meme. Right.
Yep.
You're not supposed to take this serious. Right. It's just funny meme
on that one.
So somebody writes, Rob, in all seriousness, which state in the map is a gun free zone? Like literally just takes this thing literally.
That's why I don't think that they'll ever actually take over the United States culture because they're so miserable. Like nobody's happy on the.
They don't have a sense of humor. And no,
they look for pain and agony out of everything.
Yeah. So I wrote on there, Rob, I would disagree with the inconsistent font usage in that meme. I said, I just can't look past it to discover the cleverness of the joke. I said, my indoctrination into the creative community triggered me when I saw this.
you're just trying to stir the pot, right?
Like, dude, well, but also make light of the comment, right? He comes on here. This is funny meme. Hey, ha ha ha.
Yeah.
Even somebody on the left can look at that and be like, oh yeah, it's funny, right?
There's too much seriousness.
Man. Too much division and all this other crap. And it's like, look at it. And here I am with, you know, trying to make light of this person's comment, right? Like, dude, chill out. It's not that serious, you know?
Yeah.
But some people just can't get past it, you know? And it's just, it's nuts. But anyway, that's our personality type and our political diatribe.
Yeah, we've done a really shitty job of not making this a political podcast.
This is about making money, people. That's what we're out here trying to do. This is why Steve's here today.
Yeah.
So, Steve, you got all kinds of stuff. I see your Pilot Lumber t-shirt.
Yeah. Yep, repping the brand.
Yeah, you got to live the brand, man.
Yeah,
be on it. So tell us a little bit about, so now Pilot Lumber is like your day-to-day, right?
Yeah, so I just bought it this year. It was formerly not my day-to-day. I was at an ed tech doing strategy and operations for a while. Bought it this year, and then, you know, also invest in real estate on the side. So that's like the 100,000 foot view. I just bought Pilot Lumber as my new day-to-day. I'd be an entrepreneur, just dive right in, and on the side doing real estate as well.
So you bought the company off of someone else?
I did.
Yeah. See, this is something that is popular right now.
Yeah.
Instead of going out and starting a business, everybody thinks they have to start a technology. Oh, I got an app idea or whatever. No, that shit's going to fail. Yeah. Like, chances are it's not going to work, right? Yeah. You need millions and millions and millions of dollars to build something from scratch, a new idea, because you have to market it.
Yep.
And there's so much competition now that your idea is competing against probably something else that's out there that you think your shit is novel. Yeah. Well, it's not. There's something else out there in the same space that's similar, at least.
Yeah, you have to be either unique or 1,000 times better to win in the market.
Yeah.
For a new business.
Yeah, I think the according to the book Traction, I think you had to be 9 times better. And I don't know how they quantify that, but your product has to be 9 times better.
Sounds like such shit. Like, 8 times, nope, not 8 times better. 10 times, man, come on, let's be realistic. 9 times
that's better. A sweet spot. That sounds about right.
Right there.
It feels good. Let's write a book about that.
Yeah, it is like, so 9 times better of what? It doesn't matter.
Let's justify
it. People just want to see numbers with an X behind it.
Exactly. So this is a thing now, though, is instead of dealing with all that and trying to create a brand and a new business and all, just buy something.
Yeah.
Just buy something that's working.
Yeah. It sounds pretty easy, right? Just go out and talk to a couple owners and they'll want to sell it to you.
Dude, like 2 months ago, you were like a billionaire, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you had all the lumber.
Oh, my God.
Golly, people were, you had extra security.
All those memes of I found a millionaire, I'm driving behind the guy that has a couple 2x4s on his back.
Yeah, I love it.
You almost have like Fort Knox level security. Make sure nobody was breaking in at night. Oh,
yeah. I do love those memes, though, because it'd be like a bunch of, like, there'd be like some 2x4s, and then they'd have some, like, you know, whatever, some subfloor or whatever back there. And they'd be like, look at this guy flaunting his wealth.
or the one, my personal favorite was, hey, baby, let me take you somewhere expensive. And they had set up a table at Home Depot. It's a Tinder.
Dude, Home Depot and Lowe's during that whole thing were killing it, dude. During the whole like work from home.
Yeah. Well, they're the only ones that are allowed to be open.
Yeah. Well, they were, the huge aisles and plenty of space, but people were remodeling their homes. They were like supposed to be working from home, but they're building a deck, something like that.
Because they were stuck at home. And they were looking at,
needed like, something to do,
this
man.
Looks shitty. I need to get on this now.
Yeah. So how did that affect you? I mean, how long ago did you buy the business?
I bought it mid February. So it's been about 6 months now. So it was 2021. So most of that kind of that massive spike that all of the home improvement saw was 2020, starting pretty much April, May, June, July, August, September. Just, I think the Pilot Lumber was up 25%. From year to year.
Wow. Nice.
In a business and typically in an industry that, you know, grows about 5% and is also very dependent on new home builds, remodeling. But I mean, you talk to anyone who wanted to just get out of the house and their grocery stores and home improvement stores were about the only thing open last year. Mm. So far in my time, it's been a wild ride seeing the price of lumber. It went to skyrocketed like Elon Musk, like to the moon, the Dogecoin to the moon.
Yeah.
Lumber was insane.
Lumber was like the Dogecoin of like regular things.
Yeah. So yeah, it was pretty much rocking and rolling in the spring after I bought it. And then the prices just went too high for everyone. I was like, screw this. I'm going to take vacations. Everything's just too expensive. I'm going to take a pause. So, you know, summer was decent. It was, you know, we were pretty much flat to like a 2019. We didn't see 2020 numbers. But I think as people come back, you're seeing, you know, more mask mandates, who, like with all this, who knows what, what's going to happen. And
you'll just benefit from it. Yeah. You're in a good industry for it. But also there's like a shortage of just housing period, but primarily affordable housing in this city and every city in the country.
Yeah. I mean, you'll look at since the Great Recession that you'll see graphs that most where we should have been building to meet the demand for millennials, we're like 5 million housing units short. And so there's a lot of housing units short. And right now, I mean, lumber prices shouldn't be affecting new home builds. We're back to 2018, 2017, 2019 numbers. I mean, we're way down compared to what it was in May. I think we've dropped most of the prices have dropped about 60 to 70%. So the price of lumber isn't really affecting it. It's the everything else, the doors, the windows, the everything that you want to put in your home. Everyone's just
home automation's probably without chips and things like that. The shortage of
you try to get anything,
any electronic
from China, the freight. I think someone was telling me that a typical container, if in a normal year, they would have paid $5,000 for that container to ship it over from China. I think they're paying like $30,000 to
$40,000. Wow.
To get that same container over just because it's short. I mean, I think China's starting to pull back on some of their supply just because I think with COVID, they're telling people to stay home. So it's kind of anyone's guess this fall.
Well, in Taiwan, you've got problems again erupting in Taiwan with China, you know, rolling their ships through the South China Sea and trying to claim more land. And, you know, every couple months they come out and say, Taiwan's ours.
Yep.
And the Japanese are like, no, because it's strategically, I mean, for China to control Taiwan would be, you know, a problem for Japan and a lot of other places. Let's be honest, get that trade route right there.
Yeah.
So I think you in Taiwan makes all the semiconductor stuff.
Yep.
Like that's where a lot of our semiconductors come from. So, I mean, you're probably going to see like the prices of iPhones and everything else, this new iPhone that comes out next month. I mean,
I never expected to have so much macro impact to this, to my two little stores in Bellevue and Alexandria. I mean, it's the price of lumber is affected by wildfires in Canada. It's affected the railing. We get a railing line from China and I mean, they're like, we got to increase price 10% because we got to increase.
There's nothing you can do.
Nothing we can do. I mean, interest rates, anything that all of this political craziness and, you know, all the craziness in the world is it going to impact interest rates? If interest rates go up, people probably aren't going to build as much. And we'll see if the Fed keeps buying all the bonds and treasuries and just
inflation. I mean, just simple inflation, regardless of the China thing, regardless of Canada and the lumber prices, you know, and the lockdowns and the you know, tariffs and everything else, regardless of all that. I mean, just inflation.
Yeah.
Where inflation is right now, I mean, I haven't checked it in a while, but last time I checked, it was 5.5%.
Yeah.
Allegedly, right? Like, I mean, some people say it's really 12%.
Yeah.
If you look at things that you really need to buy every day, gasoline, milk, things like that. But what got you to want to buy a lumber business of all things?
Yeah, it was, I did the weekend MBA at Michigan and
good school.
There's a few MBA programs. It's so I went from 2015 to 2017 and entrepreneurship through acquisition was already a thing, but it was starting to grow to more schools. It was started in Harvard and Stanford, then went up to, you know, Booth and Northwestern, and Michigan was another relatively not compared to Stanford or Harvard, but had an actual program called Entrepreneurship Through Acquisition. And if I was a consultant at the time doing my, you know, management consulting, also doing the weekend MBA program and thinking, you know, I want to do this entrepreneurship thing, give it a shot. So got pretty invested in the entrepreneurship through acquisition, talked to a bunch of professors, touched a bunch of people. And there's a thing called a search fund. I don't know if you've ever heard of a search fund.
No.
It's where essentially it's people post MBA, they go out and try to raise money to say, hey, I'm Steve Bennett. you know, put your faith in me because I know I can go buy a business. So you raise anywhere between, for a single search fund, searcher, anywhere between $300,000 and $500,000 to both pay yourself, pay legal fees, pay all the due diligence fees, say, I'm going to give myself 2 years to find a business. Those people that invested, they get a step up basis in those in that money that they provided to live on. Plus they get the first right to invest in those businesses.
Okay.
So I was raising money post MBA. You know, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. You know, I've had a lot of ideas and started them and stopped them. And I knew that, you know, I wasn't, and I worked at a startup in Boulder, Colorado from
good startup
from,
community.
Yeah. From the, yeah. kind of from, I think I got right before Series A and we finally went bust. Like I know that it's hard.
To oh, be, it's awful. Yeah, it and raising hard. Money and continuing to raise money and yeah. going back to the well and oh, it's tough.
So there's this kind of, I can be an entrepreneur by buying an established business that has, if you buy the right business, they have the operations in place. They have the people in place. You just have to go out there, figure out a plan and execute on that plan and try to grow that business. So I was raising a search fund for about 3 months. I raised about 75% of the time. We had moved to Cincinnati. We had we just had our second child. My wife and I were thinking like, you know, if I raise this, I'm going to have to be able to move anywhere. Like we can move to Dubuque, Iowa, which I hear is a lovely place, but you know, we have no idea where we're going to live. We like Cincinnati. She's lived here almost her whole life. You know, I was starting to get to know the city. Like I think I'm just going to take a pause on this and kind of look around, not take the money and look around, the Cincinnati area. So all the committed money I never took, but it was good chunk of change. But so I said, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to stick around Cincinnati and try to find a business around here. Kind of in that same time, I was looking at, you know, real estate. And then I got a call from a local company, Cengage Learning.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So I eventually left there as the VP of product strategy and operations this year. But in that time, they kind of gave me an offer I couldn't refuse to come work for them. So I kind of put the pause on the search fund, put the pause on looking for businesses, you know, kind of focused on Cengage Learning and see, it was a really cool place. We were doing a brand new subscription service for digital materials. And so, you know, I had my focus on there and kind of while I was doing that, I started investing in real estate. So I invested in real estate. This is probably 2018, I believe, was investing in real estate, you know, starting to think about passive income. And then kind of about late 2019, I joined a group called GoBundance, there's a bunch of guys from Bigger Pockets that do, I've listened to it on Bigger Pockets, but there's a lot of guys that did a ton of real estate stuff, but also this other contingent was, you know, business owners. So most of them were business owners or were looking to buy businesses. I'm like, you know, it's something that I've always been kind of poking and prodding and seeing what's out there in Cincinnati. I think I just need to focus on this. So that was 2019. So I got a whole list of companies. I started reaching back out to brokers and bankers and, you know, direct dialing some companies. And then kind of COVID hit and it was like, oh man, where is this going to go? But through those kind of relationships I'd built, I met a few different bankers and brokers, and I started talking to the former owner now of Pilot Lumber last June and thought, you know, it was partially because I was looking and wanted to buy a business, partially because I had my kind of interest in real estate and construction and real estate development, and then just kind of opportunistic. It was right time, right place. And I decided to take a flyer on myself and purchased it this year.
So when you talk about brokers, because yeah. we do a lot of real estate guys, you're talking about business brokers.
Business brokers, yeah. There are not many of them.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about business brokers. I was looking at buying a laundromat in Jeffersonville, Indiana, and it was going through a business broker. And I was like, I don't want to deal with a broker. I'm a broker. No one wouldn't deal with somebody like me.
I just want to go straight to the guy who owns the place.
Yeah. So, but as you start learning about it, you realize that that's probably your fastest route to getting an acquisition is building great relationships with the few that are out there. So how did you go about finding the brokers that you were communicating with?
So there's not many in Cincinnati. There's probably 3 or 4 main brokers. And when I had started reaching out to them in 2018 when I was raising the search fund, and it is a hard sell. They're like, who are you? You don't have any money. Like what's your backing? Let me see.
Do you like work at a regular job? Yeah, like you're not.
Let's see your bank account. I was like, well, I have all these people that have pledged money that will buy businesses. So a lot of them just gave me the hard no. Like, you know, like here's this company.
Sorry, you're not from one of the 5 families we normally deal with.
Exactly. We got this one that has a revenues of 50K. You think you can afford that? Like, I don't, that's not worth my time.
Hey, you want to buy a Subway?
Yeah. There's a lot of Subways for sale.
Yeah, there is.
honestly, it's just selling yourself. Finding them is relatively easy because there aren't many. There's a few big brokers, and in each of the cities, they'll have their little outposts, just like any real estate firm or real estate brokerage. But then within each city, you kind of just need to talk to as many bankers as possible, CPAs as possible, lawyers as possible, because they are the people that know, that write the contracts, that do the due diligence for a lot of these brokers.
Oh, that makes sense.
So that's how I met. I think I met, it was a banker in Cincinnati that went to Notre Dame. I graduated from Notre Dame.
Oh, awesome.
And
go Irish.
Yeah, I feel bad. We're going to beat you this year in football, but whatever, you see, I mean.
That's a tough ticket to get right now.
That's an impossible ticket to get right now.
I think that's an 8-9 game.
Right? Great. It's so awesome. I mean, Indiana, Cincinnati, Notre Dame.
We know the kid from Covcast going to put up 3 touchdowns against UC, right?
I don't know. We got Desmond Ritter, and he's pretty awesome. No, he's from Louisville.
But the kid from Covcast might be like the best tight end in the country.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes.
An animal.
Why did he go there and not UC, for crap's sake?
Oh, come on.
Because because every tight end that ever went through Notre Dame in the last 15 years has been drafted.
Yeah,
in the top
pretty much.
Rounds.
Yeah. 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 I'm just waiting.
And killing it in the NFL.
I'm so glad Texas and Oklahoma left the Big 12, because the Big 12 is going to die.
Yep.
And those teams are probably going to get split up somewhere. I'm hoping some of them come to the American to actually boost the American, take over power. Like, we take one of those Power 5 spots.
Big 10 and Pac 10 just combined, I think.
No. Just scheduling. It was scheduling.
I was just
scheduling. It's like a loose relationship.
And the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the ACC have got some kind of scheduling agreement, because they have to compete with the SEC. I mean, you get the SEC is ridiculous now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not that Texas has been relevant for, God, Vince Young.
But Oklahoma has been.
Oklahoma has been. They've been winning the Big 12. But look at the teams in the Big 12. I'd argue that the American Conference has just as good a talent is the Big 12 right now.
Spoken from a big UC guy.
But look at this. Like, think about it. Like, UCF consistently good over the last, 10 years probably?
Yeah.
In their potential, I mean, they're in Orlando. Their potential is huge. Who else do you got? Baylor? Like, Baylor's decent.
Yeah, Baylor's not bad.
Yeah, they're decent. Texas Tech, decent. I mean, Oklahoma was running away with that conference like every year.
Okay, State's pretty good.
Okay, State. That's about it.
They always seem to like
Kansas.
Oklahoma State's kind of like
garbage.
Clemson used to be. Like, they just could not be consistent for a 12-week season. They would lose a game they should never lose, and it would knock them out of a playoff spot because that's their reputation.
I mean, you get somebody like an Iowa State. Which Iowa State's good. They're probably the best remaining member, I would think. But you get them. You get Oklahoma State. Maybe Baylor, and at least one other school to come over to the American Conference. Now you might have 6 legit schools in the American.
It just doesn't make any sense. It's like West Virginia and the Big 12 made very little sense logistically.
They're going to the
now
ACC.
But now you got to have all those guys from the Eastern. I mean, Houston's down there, but the rest of them are kind of. I mean,
Baylor's a little closer to us.
Yeah, so it's going to be a.
It's going to be wild.
It's a weird conference.
I mean, I grew up in Boulder, so I was a big 12 guy. The CU Nebraska was always the best game.
And now CU's gone. Like
CU's packed.
They're going to have to bring him back somehow. Like, that's what they've been talking about. The Big 12, you know, the Big 12 guys, though, they're super confident about the Big 12. And yeah, I watch 365 Sports, and now this is becoming a sports podcast, by the way. But I watch 365
Speaking
Sports.
Speaking of sports.
Oh, yeah, you got
to
go.
Dip. I got to go to Charlotte's volleyball game.
Sorry, sorry, people. Trusty co-host Kyle Stevie has to be trusted with his kids now.
Yeah. Now you don't get to fall asleep to my voice.
No more.
Thanks for coming in, Steve.
Thanks.
Yeah, so Steve, the... Well,
actually, and before he leaves, the way that I met Kyle is actually the last property I bought was a duplex that he used to own.
Yeah, it was I didn't want to sell it, but we wound up, it was one of those deals where we had to sell it. So
yeah, you had the other business going on. You probably needed the cash to get the commercial space up and running.
No, well, we just moved into our new house and we had a lot of expenses that were starting to turn into debt that we didn't want to have.
Oh yeah. No, that makes sense.
I mean, I think about it all the time. Like, how much? I mean, I would have all my emergency fund saved up. I probably have it paid down to like $20,000 right now. But it is what it is.
It is what it is, man.
Yeah, it's good. He got it at a good price because it's appreciated like gangbusters.
Yeah. And you see the one right next to it?
Yeah. How much are they selling that for? It's the same exact floor plan, same exact everything.
$220,000, $240,000
Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
They put a
real estate's gone crazy. So Steve, so you were talking about business brokers. I got a friend, he's doing a hard money type of fund, and he's also doing business brokering on the side.
Okay.
So I think that's becoming a thing, and I own an advertising agency, and I was considering like, hey, what would it look like if I sold? So there's this group, Tobin Leff, out of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And they like specialize in agency acquisitions. Yeah. So if you run into that where there's like industries that business brokers will specialize in?
So I've seen it. I was pretty much focused in Cincinnati, and in the Cincinnati one, the business brokers are, at least the well-known ones, have a very wide array of different industries that they manage or manage the brokering of the businesses. There are some that, when I was saying like, I'm going to go gung ho, there's ones that are focused purely in healthcare. So there, you know, is something that I had thought about is saying, cause I was pretty interested in getting into healthcare cause I had been a healthcare consultant before, saying, I'm going to pay you a retainer. I think it was like $10,000 a month for 3 months, $10,000 each month for 3 months. So $30,000, and they don't guarantee that you would find a business in those 3 months, but they essentially say, we'll get you at least 5 deals that you'll look at, that you'll have good conversation with, that you'll likely want to offer.
So they can't guarantee you a number of deals.
No.
But they might not be things that you're going to be interested in.
Agree. Yeah. So the ones that I was specifically looking for, they just say, we can, so it's on the flip side, kind of like a real estate broker where, or agent, where you have the business broker, but you can also get those same guys to help you enlist in a search for you. So they are, you retain them as your, just like a real estate agent, as a buyer's agent, a buyer broker, where they get a funnel of deals. They usually put, I think, one analyst or something on them to blast their network and say, here is, we've retained the, you know, Steve Bennett as someone who's looking for XYZ companies and XYZ industries at this EBITDA or this revenue or whatever criteria you set for yourself. Are you interested, or do you know anyone that's interested? So I was very close to doing that. But it's just one of those things.
It sounds expensive too, for the possibility that you, I mean, $10,000 a month.
Yeah, it is.
For
expensive.
Most people just looking to get out of their 9 to 5 and do something. I mean, you'd have to convince your wife, hey, honey, you know, instead of redoing the kitchen, you know what we're going to do? I'm going to give these brokers $30,000 over the next 3 months to try to find a business.
Yeah. And that's where it's kind of the age old, what do you want to throw, time or money? You can throw money at it and have someone else, you know, use that time to go look. Or, you know, I was looking nonstop morning, you know, work during the day, look at night, contact as many people as possible, take as many phone calls, try to do coffees and lunches. So it's that trade-off of, do you want to spend money and have someone else spend that time, or do you want to take that time and do it?
See, it's that our personality type loves to come up with ideas and brainstorm and just talk crazy stuff and come up with the things, right?
Yeah.
But we hate to do the grunt work.
Yeah.
Like, we're not the ones who will do the actual like implementation and all that, which is totally true for me.
Yeah. I mean, like, I was a consultant for eight years before going to Cengage, and that was all we did. Just
Just sit there and think of stuff. Oh, it'd be so awesome.
It's on the companies to implement. Now it's on the flip side where, you know, I'm coming up with the ideas and the implementer. Now I have a team of 21 people now that will.
Wow.
But I'm the one that's doing the implementation of the strategy that I think of.
How many employees came with the company before you?
21.
Yeah. Oh, so you had all 21. I wasn't sure if that was you growing it or whatever. But in 6 months,
we've added one sales guy. But yeah, everyone else has stayed aboard.
Nice. Even through the transition, that's actually a blessing.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. It definitely is.
I bet you there's a lot of people listening to this that are really interested in this alternative. Mm-hmm. Because think about it, you're working for someone else 9 to 5 every day. Putting in your time and effort, 40 hours plus a week, if you're on salary, probably 60 hours a week.
Yeah, exactly.
Busting your butt for somebody else. And you've got these ideas probably, and you're like, man, I really can't do it because I can't just take, 6 months off to develop this idea.
Yeah.
This is a good kind of in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Hey, what do you want to do? What are you interested in construction? You were interested in construction.
Yep.
Hey, lumber. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know,
why not?
And I know there's housing out there that people need. I know there's a demand for it, and you're doing construction. You're doing real estate on the side.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a no brainer. I mean, it's an adjacent kind of thing, but at the same time, same world, right? Yeah. Same industry.
Yeah.
So there's people out there that I think would almost have to just kind of look at yourself and think, what do I want to do? What kind of business would I want to take over? And you hit the ground running.
Yeah. And when I start, so when I was raising money, you do something called the private placement memorandum, a PPM.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And I was looking at it the other day, essentially for a search fund, it's a pretty standard document, but in that you pick out three industries that you essentially show, I can analyze, this is why it's good. It's not that you're going to do those industries. It's just to show that the investors that you can thoughtfully think through a process, a strategy, why something is good versus not. But I was looking at mine. I think I did healthcare, solar installation, and one other thing. And almost anyone that tells you start with a plan, an idea, and you just have to expand it. So did I ever think that I was going to own a lumber yard and hardware store? Never in my entire life.
No, you weren't a kid thinking, you know what I want to do when I get older? Own a lumber yard. Yeah. That'd be cool.
But it is super fun walking into a hardware store every day.
I bet. Yeah. And there's energy and people are up early and they're working and it kind of keeps you going. What time do you get in there every day?
So my team gets in around 7. Mm. I have 3 kids, so I usually get there 8:30, 9 o'clock. I mean, but it's the life of an entrepreneur. You're always available.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do stuff in the morning before kids are awake or, after they're asleep. So it's not just a typical 9 to 5, but I mean, it gives you opportunity to do things like this.
But you go in every day loving, like you know that every bit of effort that you're putting in is somehow benefiting your company, therefore benefiting your future and your family's future.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of some, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with Cengage, great company, but you're going in there and you're just an employee.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're expendable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I learned the hard way so I graduated from Notre Dame in 2008, went to Chicago, had a gig in consulting. End of July of 2009, they laid off everybody in our consulting class, while also hiring a class of 2009. So they had all these new hires, but they're laying off everyone that was a year in, which to me didn't seem silly. It was also 2 weeks before my wedding. So, so I've always had that in the back of my mind of, even though you can be the greatest employee, there's always something that can happen where you're expendable.
You start making too much money.
There you go.
You're the greatest employee. You're the best asset, but we can hire two college kids for what we're paying this guy.
Yeah, we used to call that flipping the triangle in consulting, where you have the triangle where the bottom is the lowest pay, and then as you know, it's typically in a project, as your project lasts for longer and longer, that triangle gets a little fatter, and then it kind of flips where the...
That makes sense. I used to work in the agency world, and all the big dogs would go pitch the client.
Yeah.
So say we were pitching Smuckers or we were pitching Pampers or something like that. You send out the A-list guys, right? You send out the strategy guys and the idea guys. Yeah. They go out and they pitch it, and maybe they're on the project for 6 months or whatever. Yeah. But a majority of the work is going to be getting done by, you know, the lesser paid people. And then over time, they just take over more and more of the project, right? Yeah. Because at that point, now you're coasting.
Yeah.
Now you're kind of coasting. You don't need the big ideas. You've already developed strategy.
Yeah.
Put the big dogs on something else now, you know?
Yeah.
And what's the next project? What's the next one?
Yeah.
So that seems to be kind of like the thing that happens. I'm actually in the middle of purchasing a business potentially.
Okay.
A bakery.
Oh, nice.
It's 120 years old. It's getting ready to shut down, or it's already shut down. Okay. There were some issues with the space and everything else, and we're working through it right now. I haven't announced anything yet because nothing's set in stone, but I just had to write up a proposal, right? Yep. Which is, I think, the first step.
Yep.
Is essentially you put a Word doc together. Dear Mr. Mrs. I want to buy your business.
Like a letter of intent?
A letter of intent. Yep. Here's how much money I'm willing to spend.
Yep.
Here's what I expect from you. And sincerely, let me know what you think.
Yeah. That's what you got to do. It's a grind to try to find those businesses, and it's like any sales. You have your criteria so that you know how to qualify the businesses that you want to go. You want to own a bakery. I would love to own a bakery.
Freaking awesome. I'm going to make all these, dude. When I went on my, to Portugal with my wife for our honeymoon, pastel de nata, these little custard tart things. So good. And we actually took a class on how to make it.
So I lived in China with my wife for a year. We taught English for a year, and those little custard things, I think they come from Portugal to China or China to Portugal.
Oh, they definitely go the other way. Yeah. They go from Portugal to China. Yeah. They have to. Yeah.
I used to eat those.
Those things are so good.
Like every day.
Yeah. They're crazy. Amazing. And with the cinnamon and the little like powder sugar on them or whatever, maybe they put on it.
Yeah. I don't think they did much cinnamon and sugar.
They might've done them a little different there.
But then, oh man, those.
How is that teaching in China? Because, okay, so for another side hustle, man, we got like different, you buy a business side hustle, buy rental property side hustle, teach in China side hustle.
Yeah, it was, so Chicago, I was doing, my wife and I both moved up there before we were married. I was doing consulting. We got married, was laid off right before my wedding. I was like, man, this sucks. So my preschool teaching wife was the sole breadwinner. For probably 3 months. And I found another consulting gig in healthcare consulting in Chicago. But then we're like, man, Chicago is so cold in the winter. I don't think we can handle this. And I'm like, let's do something crazy. So we just went online and
pre-kids.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was, we got married and we're like, we're going to have kids in the next 5-ish years. Like, what can we do that's, you know, something that we'll maybe never be able to do again. And I had a buddy that post school, he went over to China and he was teaching. He's doing a few other things, but I talked to him like, hey, how is it? It's like, I mean, he spoke Chinese fluently. Like, you know, could I do it? And he's like, yeah, my brother did it for a couple of months. Yeah, I think you can do it. I can try to hook you up with a position.
Do you speak Mandarin or Cantonese or anything?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Never.
So you don't even have to do it if you go over there. Cause I heard Singapore is a great place to do it.
Yeah. Singapore would be amazing because everyone speaks English. I don't know how.
American English too.
American
like,
English. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't even speak British English. Yeah. And I'm like, what is going on? Like they sound like Americans.
Yeah. Yeah. We went to a place called Suzhou, China, which is an hour and a half west of Shanghai.
Okay.
So it was I just remember we went to Shanghai, met my buddy, like did all the crazy Shanghai stuff, then got picked up from our school and we're dropped off at this tiny little village within a city of 6 million people. So this small town of 6 million people.
In China. Yeah, right. Exactly.
We're dropped off, didn't know anybody. That we had no idea where the grocery store was, couldn't speak a lick of English, of Chinese. But yeah, we got, it was an amazing experience. I could probably talk for days on our
Did you get to go to the panda sanctuary and play with baby pandas?
No, Sichuan was one place that we went all on the eastern side of China.
Okay. And that's more like west central kind of.
That's my bucket list to go to China. There's a place called the Yellow River and then Sichuan area that we definitely want to go back to. We did a month in Southeast Asia. We did Xi'an, where the Terracotta Warriors are.
Oh, that would be fun.
We did Beijing a few times. Shanghai, we went probably 10 or 15 times. Yeah, Suzhou is amazing too.
Wow.
It's awesome.
I went to South Korea. I love South Korea. Seoul was awesome. I really like Bali, obviously. Yeah. Like, who doesn't like Bali? Thailand, we went there. We went to Singapore. I wasn't super impressed with Singapore, though. Like, Singapore seems like more hype than anything. You go there, and it's just kind of like, things are expensive.
It's a massive city, I went to Singapore when I was at Notre Dame when I was studying abroad. And it just, the crazy thing is you have these massive buildings with about 10,000 shops in the mall where they're all little stall.
And there's several levels.
Yeah, several levels.
It's crazy.
Who's buying all this stuff?
I don't know. What is going on? It's just such a consumer like place to be. Yeah. Like that's the only thing there is to do is buy things. What else is there to do? Like go to the park, maybe like big park that they've got there. And
the night zoo,
Cool. Yeah. The night zoo's cool. But like, what else is there? I mean, to make money, if you wanted to go just to make ridiculous money and teach some rich Chinese person who moved to Singapore's kid, how to speak English. Yeah. I mean, I could go teach slang. Like I could do that. That might even be more valuable so they can get online and talk shit like to American kids on the video game thing. Maybe we do that.
Yeah, I got asked all the time, like, hey, how do I speak American English? I was like, I have no idea. That's all I've known.
Yeah. Talk like me.
Yeah.
Talk I don't know.
Like me. I was like, watch movies.
Yeah. Watch movies. Exactly. So what kind of money can you make teaching English in China?
So we made 5,000 RMB each. So 10,000 RMB a month. I used to know what that is. It's about, I think, $1,500. So $750 per person, per month. But we got free lodging. A meal for us, like, you see the custard things.
Yeah.
We'd get dumplings and like, pulled noodles. There's a great pulled noodle place down in Clifton. By the way.
Oh, I live up by Clifton.
Oh yeah.
Perfect.
But pulled noodles, I probably eat 3 or 4 times a week. And I think those cost like 25 cents.
Whoa. American. So 1500 US would really stretch there.
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. It stretched.
Like maybe 4X the equivalent, like maybe like a $6,000 a month here.
Probably not that much. Probably like $3,000.
Three.
Okay. But we had, free housing.
Free housing. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. Right there. $1,600 a month.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Here.
I mean, you'd get more, a little more expensive stuff. If you went into the city with the kind of more touristy type restaurants, but where we lived, it was hole in the walls. Some of the best food you'll ever eat.
Wow. But you're doing it for the experience, not necessarily to go there and make a living.
Oh no, we came back in the red. We're like, because we traveled a ton into Southeast Asia. We ended our trip in Hong Kong, which is not a cheap city either. So we were pretty much like, we moved back to Boulder. And thankfully my brother had moved out of the condo my parents owned in Boulder. So we got to live a few months for free. But then, I did a startup right after that. And it was, I would say if there's anyone who ever wants to just do something crazy, teaching English in China or wherever, Southeast Asia, South America, it's an amazing experience because you'll meet the locals. You'll do some stuff that you'll probably never do if you're a tourist. It's an amazing experience.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. So what is the, I heard as a white dude, you can just go in a suit and sit in a window of a business and they'll pay you money just to sit there all day.
Yeah. My buddy, the one that came over there, I think he was an underwear model for a few bucks.
Oh, nice.
Yes. somewhere out there on the internet. He's in some Chinese magazine as an underwear model.
No way. Yeah. Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we were to be walking around and, we would get asked all the time because my wife's blonde too. So like people would try to just take our hairs off of our
shirts. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. There's a lot of weird stuff. You got to kind of push past the weird stuff to get through. They're just all kind of innocent people.
Yeah, they're not corrupted by...
More curious.
Curious, yeah. Oh, I wouldn't be offended by it at all. Like, I'm in their country, you know? Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
So there's a term, and I cannot remember the term for it. Rent a white guy. Fake confessions of a fake businessman from Beijing. So you get, like, invited to these events to speak because these Chinese companies want to seem more international.
Yeah.
So they'll have you go there and speak at their company thing, and there'll be a Chinese translator, and you'll be speaking in English, just some nothing, whatever you want to say. Yeah. And they're translating it in Mandarin or Cantonese or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, okay. But they're saying, the translator's the one actually saying whatever they want them to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just standing there just like saying, a dope, just pretending to talk.
Well, we this is another long, long story, but we were on China's Got Talent, and we had made it.
Were on China's Got Talent.
Yeah.
What?
So like, there's America's Got Talent, like where they go to all the different cities. So we went to that round, and so it was broadcast in our little area,
nice.
6 to 10 million people. But then we couldn't understand a single thing that they were saying. We eventually made it to like the Vegas round, and there was these people that are legit good at what they do. We were just doing some stupid drum routine that we had to do because we were in some foreign person talent show, and we were forced kind of by the Wujong district to go to America or China's Got Talent. So we were up in Beijing with my wife's family. We get a call like, hey, where are you? Like, we're really far away. Like, you need to come back. You made it to the next round of China's Got Talent. Like, what?
What in the world?
what were they saying?
You're like, with
us?
What we did?
Yeah.
How is this possible? Yeah. Oh, my God.
So we eventually had to go to Shanghai. Like, they did the whole banquet thing. We did our little stupid drum routine. And thankfully, we were X'd out very quickly.
Oh, nice. Okay. But you had to go all the way over there.
Yeah.
So it's, white guy in a tie.
White guy in a tie.
Yeah. And I think there's a name for it in China, but essentially they're saying it's on the Atlantic. But it says having foreigners in nice suits gives the company face.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I guess they would just seem international. Oh, now they're quoting Art of War. Somehow, like, that's a strategy from Art of War now.
Yeah.
And they just put you in their office. Like if they have important people coming by, they'll just put you in like a nice office and have you sitting there like you're some kind of executive at their company.
Yeah. It's like at Bloomberg for a while.
Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. And then you just walk these people through their office and there you are. And they'll open the door and say, hey, whatever. And you're like, hey, what's going on? And
like Sun Tzu that's what he was thinking when he was writing Art of War.
Yeah. That's
what
he's like in the future, the true war will be in the office. But it's crazy. And it's like, but you make money. Like these people are making like $400 a day.
Yeah.
Just sitting there.
Yeah.
And you could work on like your own stuff if you want.
Yeah.
But you're just this guy. Like, I guess if you're relatively good looking and you're, you look like a business person, you got the right kind of haircut and everything else, go over there and just make money.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to make money.
Uber. You're like an Uber. You're like Turo or like Uber or something is like a human Uber.
Yeah. Rent white dude.
Yeah. Just rent a guy in a suit. It's just weird, man. Yeah. But that's a thing I heard about. So, I mean, I guess you could do side hustles from China if you wanted to go there.
Yeah. There's China, especially the expat community, most of them taught English, but they're all like little coffee shops or areas that had, we used to belong to this one, the Suzhou Bookworm, which is an amazing place where, people would just get together and, business would be built in China kind of over there with people that they had met from the small expat communities. I think from what I've seen, it's really about just finding that community and just growing ideas and just trying to do it. Just keep trying and keep failing and keep doing it. And as long as you keep going, something's going to hit.
Some opportunity will come up and somebody will want to hire you for something or whatever.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So do you, out of all Southeast Asia, so my wife and I were like, what if we just said, screw it and just, we're done.
Yeah.
And we're like, where could we go? So we were considering like maybe Vietnam, mm-hmm.
To live or just go?
To bounce around and live for like, say like a year or two, yeah. right? Maybe Vietnam, do like a visa, was yeah. a visa jump or whatever they, yeah. they got to do. And then Thailand, yeah. maybe, down to Singapore, Bali, like yeah. Malaysia, like just bounce around that whole area because there's a limited amount of, there's a certain.
It's about like 30 to 60 days.
30 to 60 days. Some of them are 90. But 30 to 60 days, you can be in one of those places before you have to do a visa run. That's yeah. what it's called, a visa yeah. run, where you have to just leave the country and come back.
Yeah, people would do that in China, would go to Hong Kong for visa runs. I don't know what it is right now since they're kind of cracking down on Hong Kong.
Yeah.
We had a visa through our school, which was great. We could go pretty much anywhere in China for a year. We did Thailand, Bangkok, and Koh Phi Phi. Then we went to Laos. Laos was one of my favorite places.
Really? I was looking at Laos. Yeah. I was like, you know what? Nobody ever talks about Laos.
Yeah. Luang Prabang is amazing. It's like it's a little village on the river. It's the people are awesome. The food's awesome. It's a super relaxing place. We went to this other place called Vang Vieng in Laos, which it's basically like a little hostel area where just people just party their asses off. Pretty sure they shut it down though, because it's very dangerous. You go on these little decks and they just serve you God knows what in these big buckets. And so, yeah, we were, my wife and I had met some other people that we had met on like a elephant tour a few weeks earlier. And we were just,
we did the Phuket elephant thing, like yeah. elephant sanctuary. That was really cool.
Yeah. There's one I think it was in Laos where we did it, where we stay overnight. So you ride the elephants through the jungle.
And, what? You got to ride the elephants?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I didn't get to ride the elephants. I got to pet their trunk and feed them.
Oh, no, you ride them through the jungle, then you stay at this hut, and then the next day you ride them again, and you bathe with them.
Oh, you get to go in the water, and they're spraying the water all over? I love it.
Yeah.
See, people, like, if you have a side hustle and you separate yourself from the 9-to-5 world, you could do cool stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Adventures, man. Just go out and do it.
That's the goal, is to have enough kind of passive income and even with my current business to put enough processes in place where I can go somewhere for.
You gotta get yourself out of the process. Yeah. Like you gotta essentially work yourself out of a job.
Exactly.
Because then your business becomes more valuable and you don't have to, if you do end up selling this business in the future, you're no longer necessary.
Yeah.
So you don't need to have that like 3-year thing where you have to commit to stick with the company for 3 years until, you know, they can figure out a way to get you out of there.
Which the former owner did an amazing job at processes. Right now, I'm just pretty amped up at trying to grow the business. You know, it's something that I've never had anything on my own to grow. So
doesn't it feel awesome?
It feels awesome.
See, people, like, I'm telling you.
I tried to go to sleep at 10:30. Couldn't go to sleep last night because I was thinking about, I was like, what I'm going to do in the store? What I'm going to do for sales? What I'm going to do for my salespeople? What I'm going to do for... And I looked at my clock, it's 2 a.m. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been thinking here for, what is that, 3 hours?
I was playing Madden 22 until 1:30. So yeah, I was thinking about my team. Like, why did they make the Bengals so garbage in this game? What is going on? Like, what is happening? Yeah, see, but that's awesome, man. So, How do people, is there any way, like, I mean, if I'm in Cincinnati or whatever, I'm looking for lumber, why come to you? What's the, you know, or is it contractors that come to you? Is it individual people that are building things? Like, you know, how are you positioned?
Yeah, it's everyone. So we specialize in kind of high-end decking, so composite decking and railing, but we also do a ton of remodels, especially in the Northern Kentucky area where, in Bellevue, a lot of the work we do is for contractors or homeowners that want to put additions or do you know, remodel their inside of their house, or even flippers who are trying to, you know, put a bunch of new stuff in their house. And then our Alexandria site is a massive lumber yard, you know, 6 acres of just lumber. And that's where we deliver full packages, mostly to kind of custom home builders. So if you're doing high-end custom homes, we stock, you know, the number ones, the primes, lumber, stuff that you don't typically get at Home Depot or Lowe's.
I was just going to ask that, or lumber liquidators or something like that. Like
that stuff's.
They get shitty, like knotty wood and stuff exactly. like that. Okay. Gotcha.
It's curved.
Yeah.
So
pain ass.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where we're positioned. We're the higher end of the market. Our sales guys have been in the business for 30 plus years. Our inside the store, I'm thankful that we kept everyone because, you know, most of them have been with a company 10, 20 years. So you know,
they built relationships.
Yeah, built relationships. Or if you come in and say, like, there's a guy, he was trying to fix his HVAC system or something. It's for, I don't know what it was. He was trying to get all this different material. And, you know, our inside sales guy, he guided him exactly what he needs. Here's what you need. It, we're also convenient. We're right behind the Ameristop in Bellevue, which is blown up. I don't know if you listen to or look at Chowhound or on Facebook. Yeah, he does all these crazy ice cream cones.
Oh.
Yeah, so people will come on all over, like 100 miles from Cincinnati to get his ice cream.
Whoa, yeah. Okay.
He sells out every day. But we're right behind that Ameristop and you know, the party source. But you can get in and out. Like if you're looking for lumber, you can come in. I need this, this, and this. You'll pay. You can get out. You'll drive your car to the lumber yard and get right out.
Nice.
So it's the convenience. It's the service. It's the expertise.
It's knowing that if I go there, I'm not going to have to pick through a pile of lumber to try to find decent pieces. It's all good.
Or if you're going to, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's, a massive place where you're going to spend 20 minutes walking around, and if you can even find anyone to try to help you.
Right.
But yeah, we're right there helping people out.
So you pull your truck up, load it up, flatbed, whatever. Yeah. Do you guys offer any kind of delivery, like flatbed delivery and everything?
Yeah, we have three trucks.
Nice.
So yeah, we deliver all over. We'll go pretty much anywhere within 275 and south and east. So we do a good amount of, we've been doing a good amount of online advertising. And for I don't know, I need to check where we're marketing to homeowners, but we're doing a lot in Anderson, New Richmond, that area.
So you're targeting your digital ads to those areas?
Yeah, it's basically 50 miles from each of the stores.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So are you doing like Facebook advertising, or are you also doing pay-per-click on Google?
Pay-per-click on Google. Facebook is something that has been on my list of things to do. And as an entrepreneur, I never knew that that laundry list just continues to grow. So,
well, I'd say get into groups. So get into groups like Nate Barger, he was on our podcast. You know, you could go in there, get people to know you in the group.
Yeah.
But they're all people that are buying property.
Yeah.
The BRRRR Invest group.
Yeah.
But get in there and just say, hey guys, you know, I'm trying to advertise or anything on here. I'm just letting you know.
Yeah.
I've got a lumber yard. If anybody needs lumber, here I am. Right. Here's where we're located. And there are a lot of people in Cincinnati, but I think he's got over 100,000 people in that group now.
Oh, wow.
And it's super active, like crazy active.
The best ever with Joe Fairless group.
And he was on our podcast. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
The Northern Kentucky NKY investor group, but I haven't heard of the
BRRRR. It's a BRRRR invest. It's like a strategy, right?
Yeah.
Buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, that's the David Green bigger pockets
type of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Nate, he's done a great job. He's got like 1500 units now. Oh, nice. He's buying hotels. Wow. So he's definitely, if he needs lumber, I mean, he probably will.
Yeah.
Then he should totally come to Pilot Lumber.
Definitely.
Right. And
definitely.
What's your web address?
Pilotlumber.com.
Oh, that's easy. Great. Yeah. Great. That might be worth what you paid for the business right there. Holy moly.
Yeah.
So is it comparable to what you were doing at your 9-to-5 prior?
No. I mean, I worked at Cengage and I was in the product management group. So we did most of the development. So working with authors, working with all the vendors that essentially build the book or the online asset. So I left as the VP of product strategy operations. So I was doing a lot of the strategy, working with the SVP of product, working on strategy, like what should we do in the next 5 years? How should we do it? Doing a lot of org work, but it was defining the strategy and trying to help execute that through the rest of the product group. So
were you guys using like a Kajabi or something like that? Or were you utilizing any of those learning management tools?
We would plug into all those LMS tools, but it was our own software.
They're, okay.
Yeah. So we would plug into the canvases, the blackboards, all of those.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So you were compatible with all the existing things. Like Blackboard obviously is like the thing everybody uses at these schools. So
yeah.
Totally makes sense. Yeah. Okay. But financially, like when it comes to the like money, is this, are you still kind of building up compared like to, for your salary at Cengage?
So no, I took, well, that's an interesting question because I took a W-2 hit because I'm an LLC.
Oh God, this is the worst.
LLC taxes an S corp.
Yes.
So you basically have to pay yourself enough to say that, yeah, a comparable president at a lumber company would make XYZ dollars. So that was a significant hit, but it's so that everything else, all the capital gains are taxed, or all the dividends are taxed at the capital gains rate. But who knows what that tax rate's going to be.
Oh God. Yeah. With the current administration.
so I may be just jacking up my W-2 cause it might be more beneficial to be a W-2.
Well, and it's always hard too. And I don't think people understand this. Like, you know, my wife and I, we make plenty of money. She owns her own business. I own my own business, right? I own several businesses and together plenty of money. Yeah. Right. But on our taxes, yeah. it tells a different story, right? Yeah. Which it's all good. I mean, we write off what we can, yeah. You know, the accountants say you can write this off. We write it off.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah. Right. But if you want to go buy a house,
yeah. Oh yeah.
You're a 1099 or you're whatever. I mean, you probably pay yourself as a W-2, right? Yeah. Okay. So, but a lot of times they see this and if you tell the government you're poor,
yeah,
they're going to believe you're poor, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're the ones who also give you the loans. Like yeah. They're the ones who take your money in taxes, but they're yeah. also the ones who are the ones dishing the money out to the banks yeah. that are going to, you know, give you a loan. So that can be a big, big challenge. And just recently I found some banking solutions where, you know, they'll look at your income, like your gross income and everything. And they'll back out depreciation and yeah. things like that. I mean, I got tons of depreciation from the building and yeah. everything. I'm writing off over the next, you know, 5 years or whatever. And, but there's some solutions out there. They are higher interest and they require, some of them require collateral, some of them require, you know, different yeah. things.
Yeah.
But there are ways around it. Have you dealt with the way your business is structured?
Yep.
Credit lines and stuff, I'm sure, are important to you.
Yeah.
What have been some challenges?
So buying the business and working with the banks was probably the biggest challenge. So I got an SBA loan, which looks at every single aspect of your life and also puts liens on everything that I own. So
was it a 7A or
yeah,
a
SBA 7A?
7A, loan. Okay.
Yeah. So I used an SBA 7A loan. So it took a while to actually get approved. And I was in a dead period of where SBA was getting all these essentially services for people to use SBA loans to buy businesses because they're saying, you know, all these businesses are struggling. I was in a dead period, so I didn't get any of the SBA benefits, but which is fine. It's the SBA, the best benefit for the SBA is that they provide, I guess, assurances to the bank that is underwriting the loan that they will step in if anything happens to the loan.
Sure. Sure.
So they're pretty strict on who they do and don't give loans to, because they are, the SBA is essentially saying, yes, if this thing fails, bank, I use First Savings Bank will make sure that, you know, you're made whole. One of the biggest things was in our Bellevue store. It's been there. So Pilot Lumber, and it's not the name, but in its form, it's been around for over 100 years. So it started as a coal and supply company. So there's a rail spur that was essentially drop coal into where we are located. And that's where people got their heating.
Yeah.
Coal. So I think that stopped in the 30s or 40s. But the SBA looks at everything. So we had to go through an EPA phase one.
No way.
So they found, okay, there's coal. Like there's coal everywhere.
Yeah.
But there's also a gas station where they had dug up underground storage tanks, but they found plans for an above ground storage tank. So that they said during this phase one, there used to be a gas station. We can't say with certainty whether there is or isn't gas underneath.
Oh, great.
Oil. So,
oh my God,
we had to do an EPA phase or ESA phase two, which is very expensive. It's probably 15 grand to do ESA phase
what?
Two. And then where they drill a core, they talk to just like, they survey the neighborhood to see what was actually on there. But that thing pushed the closing date, maybe 6 weeks while they do their due diligence. But yeah, they had to take cores. They drilled through a portion of inside the store because there could have been a storage tank under there. So that all the while, you know, the seller wants to sell. He thought he was, you know, I was approved in, I think November of 2020. And this thing, it kept getting pushed.
He's getting frustrated. But you're like, dude,
I'm getting frustrated.
I'm frustrated too. You got friggin' gasoline under your building, potentially.
Yeah, I'm getting frustrated. It all worked out, but there's a lot of frustration. I thought this thing was dead mid-January.
When you could have put all this money into these surveys and crap, and it could have came back that, hey, there's gasoline, you know, you can't.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, would he remediate? Like, do you want to put another $100,000 into remediate? Or
yeah, it would have had to been remediation for him, or else I would have backed out.
Yeah. But would he have even had to do it because he was grandfathered in, kind of?
That's a good question. Because he had, from the Kentucky, he had his paperwork from Kentucky that said, there is no, like, you did what you needed to do for the underground storage tanks. This was through the EPA. If anyone wanted to get an SBA loan, that would have had to been dealt with. So someone would have probably had to deal with it unless they didn't go through an SBA to put up. I mean, they would have had to put up more money than I did. And then I was trying to use the same banks just to keep things consistent for the work, the line of credit. They were kind of jerking me around for a while. It was like a week or 2 weeks before we were supposed to close. And then they tried to throw on all these additional SBA fees saying, oh, you'll get those back anyway. I was like, I don't qualify for any SBA. So I had to scramble to find a new bank.
Oh, no.
And so instead of that bank, I'm with, you know, my current line of credit bank.
What a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
These regulations. I mean, I get why they're in place, right? I'm not like, it's our regulation, you know? I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
But you got a business that's been operating for 100 years there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there hasn't been a problem in 100 years. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's just crazy. It's like, you're just going to let this guy continue to run it. No matter what you find, he's going to continue to run this business.
Exactly.
So what's the problem?
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some of it was just like, man, I just feel like I was
like some of that stuff's in place just so the county or whoever is responsible for this just can make some money.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's there just because it's like, oh, somebody's going to need to do this so we're going to charge.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy. It's like when you hire a lawyer, like say we're in some kind of legal thing, right? Yeah. Like I think lawyers get together and they're like, hey, let's drag this out and make the most money possible. Right.
Yeah.
Instead of like, let's get this thing over as quickly as possible. That's never the thing. Cause they're like, hey, now we got, you know, and they get a hold of each other. Like, look, this guy and you know, your client. And,
luckily I find a lawyer who is amazing. He's, you know, he got things done quickly and he was great. So I had a great experience on the legal side.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be, you just be spending crazy money on that stuff. You find the wrong person. Yeah. Hasn't worked in a while, you know, now all of a sudden they got a client. Yeah. Let me drag this out, make some money off of this. And it's like, nothing's ever like set in stone.
Yeah.
Hey, can you give me a proposal on how much it's going to cost? Well, I don't know how much it's going to cost. The other attorney. The other attorney's kind of an asshole. It's hard to deal with, you know, God, the thing could drag out forever. Yeah. Awesome, man. So if anybody's out here looking for lumber, good quality lumber, not crap lumber that is not even worth doing anything with, just kind of throwing a bonfire and burn because it was a waste of money.
Yeah.
You need to go down to Pilot Lumber.
Yeah. And we're probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, composite decking and railing dealers in the greater Cincinnati.
So is that like a Trex? Is that what that is?
Yeah, we have, people call Trex just like Kleenex, but we carry TimberTech and AZEK, may bring in a couple others. But yeah, TimberTech, AZEK.
Is there a reason you carry those particular lines?
I think they had problems with Trex previously with warranties and you know issues with contractors and they weren't treating our contractors right. So now they moved to TimberTech and AZEK, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. I don't know much of the backstory other than we had some warranty issues. It affected our contractor. So we got out of Trex.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, whenever I do my upstairs, I've got an event center or something I want to do up there. I'm going to have to hit you guys up for some good quality lumber.
Oh yeah.
So pilotlumber.com.
Pilotlumber.com.
Awesome domain name.
Yeah. We're in Bellevue and Alexandria, but most of the people around here would come to our Bellevue store.
Are you on social at all? Like, what's the best way for somebody to get to you? Do they go on your site and just fill out a form, or do they just show up?
Yeah, if we do free quotes, so is there anything for that you're looking to do? It's like, I need to do this. Decks, especially if you give I want a 12 by 16 deck with, you know, this is kind of how high it is going to be. Here's how big my stairs are. We can turn that thing around in a few hours.
Wow. So you guys will actually say, here's how much lumber you need. Yeah. Here's this type of lumber you need. Here's how much it's going to cost. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And we're like, if you're doing a new home or even a remodel, that's what our outside sales guys do. They'll come visit. Right now, I think we're looking at 10 blueprints to quote all of the framing and the package for those.
Oh, wow.
10 blueprints. Nice. And our outside sales guys, especially in this Northern Kentucky area, if you're doing a remodel, you can come take a look. Hey, let me measure your blueprint, your plans, and we can do all the framing, the interior trim.
Oh, so you'll send outside contractors out and actually do the work.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Well, our outside sales guys worked with our contractor, or if you're just a homeowner, like, where do I start? We'll come down and take a look at you. We refer to our contractor base, and they can help you.
Nice. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So we're at sales@pilotlumber.com. You can do pilotlumber.com. I'm starting the social there. They didn't have Facebook. I put in a shell of Facebook, but that's one of my,
it'd be great to have a group that you could go on and ask questions and have a professional say, here's what you need to do.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, hey, here's how you need to measure it. Here's how you measure the height. Here's how you measure the width. Here's what you need to watch out for, you know?
And being new to the business, that was kind of my vision of, you know, while I'm learning and doing all this research and talking to my highly experienced crew, just put that on Facebook, say, like, this is what I learned today. I learned what the difference between a number one and a number two board is. Like,
yeah. I don't even know. I
didn't know 6 months ago.
No, see, I would want that though. Like, I've got a house, I've got, you know, money to spend. Right. So it's like, hey, I got a backyard. It'd be nice to have some additional space that we could utilize. There's this crazy slope in our backyard and there was a concrete pad there and a tree kind of grew under it over the years. I mean, it's 100-something-year-old house and the concrete's up, but the concrete's 8 inches thick.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And we had to tear a chunk of it out of the backyard because our sewage drain was, it actually collapsed. It was clay pipe and it collapsed. So it's old, you know, 1890 or something, the house was built. So anyway, now we got this hole in the concrete that we dug out.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, now I got to go find somebody who's going to come out and destroy the rest of this concrete and haul it off.
Yeah.
And then what am I going to do with the back after that? Maybe put a deck or something on it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to, like, you know, I've got people who do, but as a homeowner, I'd want somebody who could go out there, measure it, figure out the engineer it, and then buy all the material, do the work. That'd be great.
Yeah.
I don't want to touch it. Just have somebody come out here. I've heard horror stories about people who they're not the lumber yard.
Yeah.
They're just some guy who's like, yeah, I could build you a deck. And people are like, well, I'm trying to save money.
Yeah.
And they send this schmuck out who takes a year and a half to build you a deck.
Yeah. Yeah. We have, I think the count's 300 or 400 different people or contractors that we work with that we refer business out to. I would say right now, most of the contractors are booked through the year into spring. So that is why more and more people are trying to do it themselves. But they're, you know, we've got guys that'll build decks in, you know, 3-4 days and just crank them.
Wow.
Just keep doing them. And they're extremely professional.
And the composite decking is far superior. It's more expensive, obviously, right?
Yeah, there was a time in May where the composite versus a treated deck was almost the same cost.
And wow. Wow. But obviously when you're going to resell your home at some point.
Yeah, they're 25 or 50 year warranties, depending on which one you go with. And it's, people will say, well, they get hot. Yeah, they get hot, but they get almost as hot as just a normal treated deck. It's not all that much different.
What's the life of a normal deck versus a composite deck?
That's a good question. It all kind of depends on how well you maintain it, just like anything.
Yeah.
I think if you keep it painted and you keep it up, it'll last a while. I think the nice thing about composite is you don't have to do anything to it.
Yeah. It's already painted essentially. Yeah. Like it's already a color.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
But yeah, we're, if people are interested in checking us out in Bellevue, is probably our biggest showroom. We're undergoing some renovations slowly but surely through, since I purchased it, one of the things I wanted to do is invest money into the business and grow it and kind of grow our, be the main place for people in Bellevue, Dayton, Covington, Newport to come to actually do their shopping so they don't have to, you know, deal with Lowe's or Home Depot. So yeah. we're updating the store slowly but surely. But we have a wide variety of decking and railing out there.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, guys, pilotlumber.com. And what's the address?
It is 238 Grandview in Bellevue and 302 Washington in Alexandria.
And they don't have to make an appointment. Just show up There's a guy there. There'll be somebody to help him out.
There'll be several people there.
Love it.
Yep.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. This has been super fun.
Yeah, Steve, I appreciate you coming out. This has been great. And it's, you know, something that people need to know. I mean, if they're going to get into real estate investing or they want to, you know, do something just for their own home.
Yeah.
This has been really helpful. So I appreciate it. Or if they want to go to China.
Yeah.
Now they got tips. They got tips for China. Yep. So there you go. All right. Well, I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guests. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.